Hello there, and welcome to Marketing Room 101, the podcast where I invite marketers to join me for a good old rant and give them the chance to banish one thing from the industry forever. I'm your host, Ben Norman, Strategy Director at Principles, the agency that builds unforgettable brands, and in this episode I'm joined by Magic Numbers effectiveness expert, Tashan Nicholas. Now, I first met Tashan about a year ago when we both spoke at an event, and I was in awe of their ability to turn the very complex world of advanced analytics into everyday language even I can understand. In this conversation, we of course discuss effectiveness, good numbers versus bad numbers, and some great practical advice all marketers can benefit from. But what struck me the most is just how obsessed Tashan is with people. Everything's about collaboration, connections, relationships, and every time a number is mentioned, it's never without consideration of the human in front of or behind it. And that's why I particularly enjoyed this chat. So here's my conversation with Tashan Nicholas. Tashan, welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Great to be here. We're really excited for this.
So to help our listeners picture the scene, Tashan, can you please kick us off by describing the room? What's it actually like in here in Marketing Room 101? Now you're seeing it for the first time.
Well, now I'm seeing it for the first time. I'm seeing cubicles and sparsely populated, a lack of energy, perhaps a dismal amount of conversation happening. And really, there's a greyness. Maybe there's a bit of rain outside, but not that kind of rain that makes you pensive, that kind of rain that makes you want to stay inside and not even go out for a walk for lunch. That's what's happening in Marketing Room 101.
Sounds a little bit, almost a bit Severance.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Severance. So yeah, that is actually very close to what I was picturing.
Yeah. So why is this your nightmare? What's the alternative for you? What would be the ideal space?
For me, the beauty of marketing, and we'll probably just talk about this a bit later on as well, is the people side of it and people coming together. And so for me, the space that I just described is the space that's the antithesis of collaboration, the antithesis of kind of letting the joy in and letting facilitating the connection, etc. And so a space that would do that is one where there's like plenty of breakouts where people are co-creating work together, collaborating, discussing, and it can really energize space, open space and lighting. But what one where you can tell when you're looking at a space that what's been prioritized is people working together, as well as being able to have independent working spaces for those that want to focus, for those that want to knuckle down. So balancing the two.
That seems like the tightrope, doesn't it? I have so many of these conversations where it comes down to people want the ability to work together and the ability to collaborate and the ability to have that kind of indescribable buzz that you get when everything's firing on all cylinders, but then also the ability to go into a room, shut the door and put up the barriers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I have two very focused modes where I can hyper-focus and I was like, I need complete silence, mostly gained through actually having earphones in that block out sounds, but those two modes happening at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people in the office working with me know it's quite clear because I either have my earphones in or out. We were talking about this the other day. There are some businesses where you wear a different coloured cap when you're in the mood for collaborating or not. It feels a little bit Severance maybe, but it's a bit crazy. But yeah, I signal with my earphones. So Tashan, you are a director at Magic Numbers. What I want to know is, what is so magic about numbers?
Oh, what isn't magic about numbers is the real question. But no, on a serious note, I've been working in marketing analytics, marketing effectiveness for over 10 years. And being here very specifically kind of speaks to why I work in this area. There's something really concrete about understanding numbers and evidence that can help us make better decisions. But it's only when you combine it with people and can tell it in a compelling and convincing way that it generates change. And so what's magic about the numbers here is that it's kind of numbers that lead to change, as opposed to something that is like really interesting and great insight, but actually doesn't generate the change that we're looking to see. And so that's what brings that magic touch to it. Like, how do they sparkle and what makes them make someone say, do you know what? I think we should change the way that we're doing things. I think we should invest in that media channel. I think we should increase our percentage of brand versus performance, let's say. I think that we should do some experimentation. I think that our measurement landscape has changed and evolved, and so our measurement strategy needs to change too. It's the numbers that make people think about doing things a bit differently. That's what makes them magic, and that's the type of numbers that I like anyway.
I love that idea of sort of numbers plus people.
Because yeah, absolutely.
It almost feels counter to what you usually think of, you know, as a strategist in the marketing world. I often find numbers both incredibly useful, but also incredibly frustrating, depending on how we work with them and how we treat them. But it is that difference, isn't it, between seeing lots of numbers on a screen, but not seeing the people behind the numbers. You know, actually, what does this number over here translate to in the real world?
Absolutely.
And what does that mean for the people behind that? And so that's the missing link often, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, it's the people behind the numbers, but it's also the people in front of the numbers. So what does that mean for the story you're trying to tell for the person in front of you? But just as a human, as a senior marketer that's trying to do a job, how is that number helping them in what they're trying to do? And how can you speak to them as a person, as opposed to here's a clinical report and here's some really cold numbers? Well, no. And that's why I mentioned the people space and having a space for people, because for me, everything is about people. We're trying to make good decisions. We're trying to I can't speak for everyone. Maybe I should say but I'm trying to work in a way that means that you're doing something that you're excited about, that leads to a change that you believe in. And the numbers are a conduit to us getting there. Yeah.
Now, this is kind of part and parcel of what you do at Magic Numbers. And I suppose I have to say, personally, I'm very grateful to Magic Numbers because you guys make my life, and I'm sure a hell of a lot of marketers' lives that are listening to this, a hell of a lot easier by putting out charts and graphs that actually make sense. Mm. It feels like, to me, you simplify the incredibly complicated matters in our industry. The main thing I take from what you do is that not all numbers are created equal. There are good numbers and there are bad numbers, and it's quite hard to know how to spot which is which sometimes. So how can a marketer tell what is a good number and what is a bad number?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think it's something that, so Dr. Grace Kite, who founded Magic Numbers, is at the heart of what we do. So much so that she made a whole course about it. So DataWorks, which is our course that talks about marketing data and how to use it, is all around, like module 3, I believe it is all around how to spot shonky data. And so in terms of starting maybe at a wider lens and then zooming into that day-to-day decision, the first question that I feel is really important is, well, what do I want to use this data for? And what are the pros and cons and the limitations of each of these different things that we can use it for? And so when we think about the measurement landscape, there's a lot of data being used for, I guess, decision making. But we know the limitation of it is that we know that it doesn't have the complete picture. So one of those things is focusing on last click attribution, for example. We know that that isn't the full picture, but we know that actually lots of decisions are being made off the back of it. And so actually a question is, well, okay, what types of things can help us understand a fuller picture? So one thing that we work on, Econometrics, MMM, that helps us understand all potential drivers of sales across time. And we know one of the pros is that it does that. One of the cons is perhaps it's not as immediate as perhaps some of these other metrics. And so rather than thinking of, say, good and bad at this macro level, I think a helpful lens is perhaps what can and can't this be used for? And if it can't be used for that, then what can? And so that's a question that, rather than saying an answer, I'm always giving people like a theoretical framework that I think would be helpful. So if you think of your toolkit of things, okay, what can and can't this be used for? And then what can? And then iteratively going through that process. Then on a day-to-day level, I think it's about us being able to understand and spot data that's perhaps not helpful or perhaps misleading. And so asking ourselves questions around, okay, do we suppose there's causation here between this and this? Or do we think that something else is happening? Is it a correlation, or are these just two random events happening at the same time? And it goes into that sense of creating an investigation and putting our analyst hat on. So yeah, I think I went a bit away, but then I came back eventually.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think it's interesting when you talk about last click attribution and the sort of nonsense that can sit behind that. You know, there are lots of other what people call KPIs. I like to think of them as PIs, because not everything can be a KPI, but there are so many different things out there where it's like, often I find, whether it's the marketer, whether it's the agency to blame sometimes, but if you want to find a number to tell the story you want it to tell, then you will always find it, won't you? Whereas I suppose having that objective view is always so important, isn't it? Let's look at the numbers objectively rather than trying to find something to back up our hypothesis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can always find a number to speak to a specific storyline to some degree. I think that's why it's really important whenever you're venturing into any project where there's a goal on the other side to agree what is a meaningful metric that, if we monitor, will be both meaningful from a business perspective, but also where we think the stimuli, typically for us marketing and advertising, is going to have an uplift or response. And a lot of the time when we're building models for different clients, that's a question that we're asking as well. We're asking ourselves, well, where do we think marketing's having an impact? And so actually, is it higher up the funnel? Is it lower up? And if it is higher up the funnel, then how do we play this back to the business in a meaningful way so that actually what we're playing back is going to lead to business change and change that marketers can also get behind as well?
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. So before we get into banishing something, now you and I have met before, but when I was doing a bit of further digging for this episode, I couldn't believe how much you actually do and how much you have done. Sort of caught me off guard a little bit and made me feel personally a little bit sad about my own progress. You seem to have a CV about twice as long as I'd expect to see from somebody double your age. And that seems to include managing to balance being an expert in effectiveness and analytics, which we've just been talking about, with also coaching others in their own personal and professional development, and also being a very active advocate for a load of courses, in particular across diversity, equity, and inclusion. What I want to know is, how do you actually do it? How do you manage to do so much in so many different areas without actually letting anything slide?
That's a great question. I'll let others be the judge of whether anything's being let slide, but the feedback that I'm getting is that I'm not. I guess for me, I'm really lucky in that I have lots of different interests and I'm able to pursue them in a way that feels meaningful. So for me, I work across multiple projects. So obviously I'm here at Magic Numbers. And so that's where I get to use my marketing effectiveness hat. And there's so much curiosity that comes from that. That's something that I've done since I graduated. The other things kind of picked up from 2020. And in terms of being able to fit it in, I don't know. I feel like if you have a plan, then you can make a life that fits that plan. Other things just might have to rearrange for it to be true. Sometimes I think if we have very fixed ideas about how things are meant to look, say, for example, I'm meant to work 5 days explicitly on this one thing, and that's a job. And then everything else will be not a job, and I'll pursue it in my spare time and I'll do X, Y, and Z. That's the way to do it as well, if that works for you. But actually, if you want to integrate other things into your life, well, think, what's the life I need to create that allows me to do all of these things, rather than how do I make it up based on a fixed idea of what a life is meant to be? I don't know if that's too philosophical, but the real answer is I don't know how I fit all in.
But I suppose as somebody who does coach other people, yeah, I guess that's where you come from with that, right? That the starting point
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you actually want your life to be? And what do you want, you know, as opposed to what job am I going to do in my 5 days a week?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the hat that I bring to marketing effectiveness and everything, to be honest. In an ideal world, what do we want it to be? And if we start from there and then add the boundaries of reality on afterwards, that's a better place to start and then trying to go up from there.
Now, the time has actually come for you to banish something from the marketing world forever.
Forever, yes.
I would like to know, Tashan, what would you like to banish, please?
So there's a couple of things for me, and I think I'm definitely coming from my hat as a measurement person, and then also as a measurement person that also has a people lens as well. So there's two things. Can I just say one?
You can have one to banish and you can have a dishonorable mention.
Okay. The definitely one that I think we need to banish is when we see measurement and measurement in a holistic form as a bolt-on. I think we need to banish that. Obviously, the people that I spend most of the time working with are not seeing it as that. They're seeing it as something that's complementary. But then when I look at marketing in general, sometimes in the discourse, measurement can be seen as a nice to have.
And why do you think we've got to this place where it is seen as a bolt-on? Is that to do with the fact that measurement seems to just be an exercise of the marketing team and not treated at a higher level? Or what do you think's gone on here?
Yeah. First, I think I have to review the statement that I've made in terms of measurement as a bolt-on. And I think at first I have to specify it's like meaningful measurement that measures the incrementality of what we're doing. Because what I do think is happening a lot of the time is measurement is happening, but perhaps that's not the incremental view. It might be the linear or the last click view of the world. And so what I think has happened is, and what we see happening quite often, is perhaps an overuse of that as the version of the truth of what's happening. But we know from lots of different studies that when we look just at the last click view of the world, and we know from studies that there's lots still using it, is that that underestimates lots of different channels, overestimates lots of different channels, such as underestimating perhaps demand building channels and overestimating demand harvesting channels. Also, what attributions you go with, because we know that when you look at it through different platforms, you get a different number. And so you've got different versions of the truth. And so what I'm talking about here is actually, do we do a project that helps us understand what's meaningfully happening? And that's not just through, say, an advanced analytics project that's an MMM, but it might be understanding what our audience is thinking. It's all of that. I think for me, I mean, I'm a measurement professional. I'm obviously going to think everyone should do measurement, but let's lean into that. But I think it's almost to bake a cake, which we know requires some level of precision, and to kind of have an expectation of how it's going to be and want a really specific result, but not necessarily to measure the ingredients before putting them in. And then afterwards, not to have evaluated, was that the cake that you intended, and did that cake have the taste factor that you thought it was going to have? Did people like that cake as much as possible? You take those elements away, then we're just making the cake we want.
Yeah, I like the cake analogy. And I think you're absolutely right. When I think about how many clients that I work with or businesses I've worked with in the past, or some, I should say, rather than many, I do think there's an aspect of let's spend all our time and effort measuring the performance of the cake after we've made it, rather than looking at what we need to put into it in the first place, or rather than deciding what do we actually want to achieve upfront and setting those parameters and then building a plan. So yeah. I think, like you say, when you use the term bolt-on, it's often an end stage bolt-on where it becomes a problem, isn't it? It's like, right, okay, we've come up with this plan.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we've decided, so how are we going to actually prove to the board that it's actually worked on it?
Yeah, exactly. And going back to that cake analogy, it's exactly that. It's not having it as that end bolt-on thing. It's about having those touch points throughout the entire journey. So actually, think about the audience. Perhaps we were going to make a Victoria sponge, but perhaps people want a coffee and walnut cake. That needs completely different ingredients, completely different quantities, etc. But if we go out there with Victoria sponge, people will still eat it, of course, but it's probably not the cake that people wanted. They'll still say, yeah, I liked the cake. And so we're still getting that feedback loop that the cake was good, and then we'll do the thing again. But actually, if we're not having those touch points across the entire funnel, then we don't know what we need to make, and then we don't know how we need to make it. And then when we're evaluating, we don't know how to evaluate it as well.
Do you think there's a problem now whereby marketers have too many numbers to deal with and too much to measure? Do you think that's had an impact on this problem?
I think we definitely live in a time where there's so many different versions of the truth. And there's been, ever since like 2004, and we've seen the dissemination of lots of different media channels and the proliferation of different ways of buying and executing media. I think it does add complexity. So yeah, I do think we're living in incredibly complex times, and something new gets created and it gets branded as perhaps the version of the truth that is going to change everything, and that this is going to be the thing that makes you win, when in reality, it's a combination of them. So yeah, I do think that there is a job to do of managing complexity, especially in this time. That is a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I think there's lots of numbers to choose from. I do think, however, it goes back to that question of goal setting and working collaboratively across different partners to understand, well, how do we reach that goal in the most meaningful way? And how will we know we've reached that goal? Through our marketing campaign, for our advertising levers. And sometimes not. A lot of the time when we're working with people, we're not just measuring the marketing impacts, we're measuring the non-marketing impacts. And so having visibility of what else is driving the outcome that we're intending is also important, because actually, if we get to the end of the campaign and the outside world has changed, and so inflation's gone up, we know that actually this price and promotion's happening, even though that would technically fall into the four P's of marketing, but all of these other events have happened, we can't tell what's happened to our marketing activity, because we've got all these other factors that we need to understand as well. And so I think being able to discern what is happening at both a marketing and a non-marketing way is really important.
I think it all comes back, doesn't it, to what the role of the marketer is in the organization, I suppose. And, you know, as you're talking there, I'm thinking of diagnosis before strategy, before tactics is probably the thing that I say more than anything else. And so often I will receive a brief where there will be 5-10 KPIs listed on a campaign brief. And the first thing I say is, so what's the KPI and what's just a PI? Because if everything becomes important, if everything becomes a key performance indicator, then none of them are they, in any meaningful way? What would you say? So if I'm a marketer right now and I'm running an FMCG brand that I want to grow, if we're looking at banishing measurement being seen as a bolt-on, what is the ideal picture for measurement throughout that project? How should I be thinking measurement right from the start?
I think it's thinking like with an analyst hat on throughout the entire process. And to be honest, all the people that I typically work with, measurement is high on the agenda. And so they're very much thinking these ways already. And so it's thinking with that evidence-based hat on. Even from a initial concept lens, it may be asking the question, what evidence exists already for what we're trying to do? It says, do we have evidence of our own? And failing that, do we have evidence for our specific category? And failing that, do we just have general principles and guidelines and evidence that we have from theory? And then kind of running that red thread through your entire ideation through to execution process. Based on the evidence, what does it say that we could do? And then also remembering that the evidence is backwards looking. And so each person's conditions are going to be completely different. The world would have changed from when the evidence is created. So it's not to say that we just rely explicitly on evidence and then ignore all other stimuli. And so it's like, what other information do we have at our disposal about what the world looks like right now? What does our consumer look like right now? And what are our pieces of data that support that? What are our goals and how does it align to that? Then when it comes to actually executing on the initiative itself, it's, well, how will we do that? Like, what does the science say is the best way? What way do we want to do it? And do we have a hypothesis for why our strategy is different? So an example might be, you might be looking at benchmarks that says, oh, at a category level, we need to invest our money predominantly in TV to build our brand, for example. But you might see that actually for your specific brief, it's targeting younger demographic, and you might decide that actually in the TV mix, you might have a higher mix of VOD, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that where the data that's backwards looking, you might choose to look at something slightly different. But invariably, I think when you come from a really structured hypothesis base, like hypothesis, evidence, provocation, process, at test, iterate, you just think of measurement throughout the entire conversation. It might not always be having a formal measurement in every touch point, but it's the thinking process that leads you to think, well, I probably do need to measure this. If when we do this again, I want to have a data point that can help support this hypothesis.
I agree entirely with all of that. And I think it's starting to touch on a bit of an issue, which is something else that I wanted to sort of pick your brains on around building a picture that enables creative magic, along with building a picture that enables us to be evidence-based, fact-driven. How do you sort of walk that line and make sure that whilst you are being evidence-based, fact-driven, looking at all these different areas to make sure that the direction we're going in is going to work, how do we do that and also prevent that from removing that room for creative magic?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I'm someone who values creativity so much. It's a super important value of mine. And so I do a bit of improv. And in improv, we have like, yes, and. And so I would say that when we think of it, it's numbers and, or it's creativity and, if that makes sense. And so I don't see one as in place of the other. The numbers are there to provide evidence to either answer hypotheses or to inspire and act as a provocation for new hypotheses to be made. But if we're doing the exact same thing again in a really controlled environment, let's say where everything is controllable in the world, if we're doing the exact same thing again and everything else is controllable and it's the exact same iteration and we had the evidence of explicitly how it was done, then I would say in that environment, the numbers will probably tell you what's going to happen, because in this controlled environment, we know that 1 plus 2 is equal to 3. But in the real world, we know that there's actually so many variables that aren't controllable and that actually it's an ever-changing environment. And so what I think that the numbers are really, really great at doing is saying, this is what works when these are the conditions, and following similar conditions, this is probably what you should do. This is what the evidence says. But around that, there's loads of creativity as to how that's done and how that's executed. Incremental to that as well, in the world where there's new conditions, that's where creativity lives as well, because actually the numbers saying we should be doing this, but also we know that this is new and different about the world. I think when it can be, I was going to say dangerous, which feels like such a dramatic word to say.
Let's go with it. I like it.
Yeah, dangerous is where evidence glaringly points towards one direction and it's completely ignored. I think that's the situation that I think is avoidable, but I think they both work together.
I think it's the age-old strategist-creative combination, isn't it? Where it can be the most powerful combination in a business, yeah. But also it can be the most fiery relationship sometimes. But I guess that is where great stuff happens, isn't it? That constant tension between evidence and magic and yeah. evidence and the unknown is yeah, where magic. Great stuff does happen, doesn't it?
I think as well, like, do you know like De Bono's six thinking hats?
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know well enough to explain it right now, but give it a Google. It essentially talks about, it has six colors and it's six really explicit ways of thinking.
Right.
And so, for example, the black hat is the critical thinking hat where you really like dissect the idea. And I think the yellow hat is the hat for creativity. And I'll stop there because that's as far as Marina goes, but there's six hats. And the idea is that you might conduct a meeting to get to some form of output where you either all put a specific hat on about the idea and then think like that, or you might do it where you all wear slightly different hats. And so, relating it back to this, I do think it's actually really important that in a way there is tension where people dogmatically express what their point of view is, whether that's creativity or being evidence-based, yeah. because actually in those two tensions can lead to really great understandings. And it's like, well, if you're so true in what you're saying and I'm so true in what I'm saying, what about now event C, where both of these can be true? But in order to get to that yeah. C, you almost need to reach the peak argument of each of those different areas.
I love that. And on that note, I am going to accept banishing measurement as a bolt-on. So that will now
thank
be
you very much.
How does that make you feel?
Validated.
Perfect. So before you go, is there anything that you would like to return to the marketing world while you're here?
Yeah, I think this is going to relate to a dishonorable mention, but I'm going to mention it in a slightly different way. So I think that, and I don't think this is just a marketing thing. I think this is an industry thing, not an industry thing, maybe a cultural thing where we are in the world. But I think when we think of leadership, we often speak around the leader and also the people as well, this concept that actually the role is around the people and what people have done, what they're doing, and how they've imparted this knowledge onto other people and the team. And we speak about the people element. But what I find with the marketing industry currently is a lot of the time we speak about work execution. And so I think there's an opportunity to also think about the people. And I think we used to do this all the time, right? When you do the IPA Foundation certificate, we speak about the thought leaders at the time and how they started these great companies and made great waves in these organizations and the people that they imparted their wisdom into. And it was focused around not just the execution, but more, I guess, the pedagogy, the thinking, and how that then changed the way that people do things. Whereas a lot now I hear us talking about the work and the people have done great work. But I think there's so much in between that to get to that great work. We have these amazing senior marketing leaders and amazing marketers in general. And so I think there's opportunity just to bring back talking a bit around the marketer, what they do, how they do it, how we create great teams and what it means to be a great high-powered team beyond just what the media channel choice was, what the creative execution was. How did that team work together? What was the tactics that the leadership used to set a vision to get people on board with this, not just with the idea, but even working together? How did that change happen across time? Not just in the sense of, okay, we shift the mix between performance and brand from 40-60 to 60-40, but what was that actual change that happened to the people? Because it's ultimately people that's led to that change and people that's been brought on the journey. And so I'm like, bring back people and talking about people and their roles. And I think it's something that still does happen, but prioritizing it and putting that in the center, I think there's lots to learn from the ways in which marketing teams, agency teams, measurement teams are working collaboratively and co-creating great pieces of marketing and advertising, as well as the actual work itself and the actual measurement and outputs of it.
So I take this from what you've just said as it's not just that marketing has been seen as being very executional and very tactic heavy. but it's more that when something is done, the attention and the focus and the credit is all placed on the end point. Two things have popped into my mind, really. One is another cake analogy, which is it's almost like all the attention is paid to the cherry and it's just cherry on top, right? As opposed to the whole thing. And then the other thing is that idea of, what's the saying? It takes a village to raise a child. I think it takes a village to create a campaign.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I don't know if it's just a sign of an awards-led culture, but when you look into any really great campaign, it's never a linear process, is it? It's never a single moment of genius.
Absolutely.
Or if it is, it's so many other people involved, isn't it? You hear about how Levi's got Flat Eric onto TV and the work that went on behind the scenes there.
Yeah.
You hear the stories behind those and all the people that were involved, from client service to the client themselves through to producers, directors, researchers, all that sort of stuff. And it's actually much more fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like there's such an opportunity for us just to re-fall in love with everything that's a part of the process that brings this magic to life. Because when I think of it, back to the cake analogy, we all might have like the flowers and the utensils, etc., but we're all going to bring it together in a slightly different way. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, to your point, rather than thinking about the cake and that great thing that looks really pretty, actually, like in Bake Off, because Bake Off's right now, everyone's getting different things at the end, but they all have access to the same flowers and same ingredients, etc., but everything's slightly different. What made each of them get to their different result? That's what I'd love to spend some more time talking about with people.
I mean, as a person whose job is strategy, I am fully, fully on board with returning this to the marketing world. So I will let you take that back to the marketing industry. What would we describe it as if we were going to put that into a few words?
Oh, that's such a great coaching question. A few words. Just re-platforming the people journey of working in marketing and advertising. That was a few more words, wasn't it? I have a go. I went left and right during saying it. Just like the power of people in marketing and just talking about that.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. So I have one thing to ask you before you go, and this is my brother's question. So each episode, my brother, who doesn't work in marketing, comes up with a question for my guest. This week, he wanted to ask you, you're a director at a company called Magic Numbers. So Tashan, who's your number one magical character in film, literature, or even real life?
Oh, wow. What a fun question. This is a very difficult question for me. I like Supernatural is one of my all-time favorite genres of anything. And so magical characters, wow. And even one in real life. Oh,
do they exist? Are there magical? I mean, who knows?
Oh, wow. I'm going to say an answer, which actually isn't magical in the sense of, say, a wand, but is magical in the sense of someone that I found magical in my life, which was my grandmother. And I would say she is probably the most magical person. Yes, my grandmother Marjorie.
That's a great answer. Why are you choosing your grandmother Marjorie over anybody else?
She was just such an inspirational lady for me specifically. But she once said to me, just in a standard conversation, she just asked me, where's your joie de vivre? And I was like, wow, first of all, that's such an extra question. So I just love that you're saying this to me. And two, it really makes you think about, what's your life's joy? So I think of her as my first coach, my first ever magical coach, getting me to think about, where's my joie de vivre? Where is it? What is it? What brings it about? So yeah, I offer that to all of the people listening now. Where's your joie de vivre?
I absolutely love that. Yeah. Let's all answer that question. What I love about that is you didn't just say Harry Potter. If we were going to get deep on this, what really is magic? Because it sounds like your grandmother's, she's absolutely.
That's exactly what is magic. We have magic numbers. We have magic grandmothers. Magic is all around us.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's a beautiful note to finish on. Now, Tashan, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do it and why might they do it? Because you appear to offer a variety of things to the world.
Yeah. So Tashan Nicholas, you can find me on LinkedIn. In terms of why they would do it, I think specifically focusing on this, I help out with some wonderful courses that Dr. Grace Kite has made, and we have them coming up in October. One is all around how to get the right mix between performance and brand, and the other is the how-to guide for marketing data. So it literally talks about some of the things we spoke about today. And I'd say that's probably the biggest reason that someone listening to this would want to get in touch, just to find out more about that. One thing that we know is training is just so important in marketing, but we know that not as many people have encountered it as there are marketers. And so it's just a wonderful opportunity to have that conversation around what does great marketing look like.
Yeah.
If you go to our site, magicworks.training, there'll be information on those courses. Alternatively, you can just reach out to me on LinkedIn and I will point you in the right direction.
Brilliant. Tashan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So that was my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Tashan Nicholas. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, I'd love it if you could please send it as a link to just one other person who you think will enjoy it too. And remember, if you've done anything recently that you feel guilty about, for example, if you accidentally put normal butter in mashed potato and fed it to your dairy intolerant partner because you couldn't be bothered to make it again, then you can cancel out that bad karma in just 30 seconds by leaving a review of Marketing Room 101 wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, if you'd like to arrange a free chat about how I and the Principles team can help grow your brand, just find me on LinkedIn under my name, Ben Norman. And if you'd like to know more about Principles, just head to principlesagency.co.uk.